Okay, Matthew chapter 7. Matthew chapter 7. We started this kind of broke new ground last week on chapter 7. I'll remind you that 5, 6, and 7 are just one long sermon or teaching moment that Jesus had it's called the Sermon on the Mount. And it's been a good study. Now we're finally in the last chapter of this sermon. We'll begin in verse 1. It says, "Judge not, that ye be not judged. For with what judgment ye judge, ye shall be judged. And with what measure ye meet, it shall be measured to you again. Why beholdest thou the mote that is in thy brother's eye, but considerest not the beam that is in thine own eye? Or how wilt thou say to thy brother, Let me pull out the mote out of thine eye, and behold, a beam is in thine own eye? Thou hypocrite, first cast out the beam out of thine own eye, and then shalt thou see clearly to cast out the mote out of thy brother's eye. Give not that which is holy unto the dogs, neither cast ye your pearls before the swine, lest they trample them under their feet, and turn again and rend you." The word mote there is a little more than what you and I might think. It's more when it speaks of a mote being in the other person's eye. It's more than just a small speck or a piece of dust. It would be more like a splinter. It would be more like a piece of plant or something. It'd be something that's visible is what I'm trying to say. Obviously, a speck of dust in somebody's eyes is not noticeable by another person. But by the word mote, he's saying it's something that is it's noticeable enough, okay? And, of course, a beam, or the term that he uses there, means something entirely different. It means something gigantic in comparison to the mote. And the point being made here, by describing those two words, is they're both sins. They both represent sins. They both need to be removed and gone, okay? But this text, Jesus is illustrating the absurdity of us being quick to judge other people. In other words, we can see that little splinter in their eye, but then we've got this great big gigantic beam or whatever it may be in our own eye, and he's speaking of the self-righteousness, the hypocrisy of having our own major faults going on, our own problems in our own life, and but then not noticing them, not recognizing them, but being able to see the smaller things in the life of someone else. And it's just essentially, it's self-righteousness. And we've observed this many times along the way, but the big issue with the scribes and the Pharisees was just that, self-righteousness. They were blind to their own faults, but they were very they used a magnifying glass, if you will, to assess the lives of those around them. Even the smallest of things they made note of. And by the very nature of self-righteousness, it's really this: justifying ourselves while condemning other people. That's self-righteousness. And it's essentially putting ourselves in a place of God, putting ourselves in a nutshell, saying that, hey, it's my job to point out to you what you're doing wrong. I'm qualified. You see, the self-righteous person has a sense of superiority. I am elevated. I'm in a position to be able to declare to you what's wrong in your life. I'm qualified to do that. I'm qualified to make determinations that otherwise would be reserved for God. And that's a pretty arrogant approach to things, but that's exactly the way the scribes and the Pharisees were. Now, I want you to notice what verse 4 says there. It says, "How wilt thou say to thy brother?" You see, he's saying, how are you going to walk up to your brother and say, "Let me pull out the mote out of thine eye"? You see, it would essentially be, let me show you what's wrong. Let me tell you what's wrong with you. Let me straighten you out, if you will. And you've heard me say it many times, but the only legitimate job of straightening people out is given to the undertaker. okay? He's the only one that's allowed to straighten people out. Otherwise, it's not our job. God did not put us in a position to be able to inform everyone of their wrongs. It's just not our job. Now, is there ever an instance or a situation where we need to show someone their faults? Of course there is. As parents, we have a responsibility to help our young people recognize their shortcomings. As spouses, oftentimes, iron sharpens iron. The one or the other being able to say, hey, here's what's going on. Here's what I see. As employers, you know, you're in a position that you can tell those that work for you. Close friends sometimes need to be able to help another friend see something that they're doing that maybe needs to be corrected. But even in those circumstances, we should always be conscientious of our own faults as well. Verse 5 says, thou hypocrite, first cast out the beam out of thine own eye, and then thou shalt see clearly to cast the mote out of thy brother's eye. When we cast the sin out of our own life, we're exercising our humility and we're owning up to our own problems. And when we've done that, when we've cleaned up ourselves and taken responsibility for ourselves, then that is cultivated in us the appropriate attitude that is needed to be able to approach someone else. Because when we've just cleaned our own house, we're humble enough that our approach to other people is going to be tempered with grace and compassion. And it's one thing to be critical and condescending to the person that you're trying to help, and it's something else altogether to be encouraging and kind and saying, hey, I just want to help you with this. I want you to, you know, perhaps maybe shine some light on something that you're not seeing. You see, that approach is helpful, and in most cases would be well received. But a judgmental spirit will rarely be well received and rarely be effective in helping the person at all. And so really it's just a creator of problems. But a humble, edifying approach to people more often than not will be well received and will result in that person saying, hey, thank you. I probably did need to see that. And maybe something good will come from them having received that counsel. Furthermore, though, casting a beam out of our own eye, or taking sin out of our own life, gains our respect, or gains the respect, if you will, of other people. When we are humble in our own admissions, then others see that we're owning up to our faults. They see that we're willing to see our own shortcomings, and they have a greater respect, which positions us to be esteemed by them in such a way that they would listen to us. You see, it's just because we're being fair, we're being just with ourselves, and so they feel as though we'll be fair and just with them, and people are more likely to invite our opinions or our counsel if we've already been fair in taking care of our own faults, okay? But when, like the scribes and Pharisees, when we hold ourselves as being right all the time and everybody else wrong, then it's a glaring hypocrisy to those around us, and there's no respect. And really, it will serve as a source of frustration to those we really need to be trying to help, are really just turn a deaf ear to us. It flies in their face what our hypocrisy does, and they just don't want anything. They don't want that. They don't want our counsel. And I've often talked to parents about this and have had to, as a parent myself, try to recognize this. If we adopt the philosophy of do as I say, not as I do with our children, that's hypocrisy. That's the kind of hypocrisy that breeds resentment in young people. It's unjust. It's unfair that mom and dad have a different standard than me. They tell me to do this, but then yet they don't do it. Or they tell me not to do this, but yet they do. You see, kids pick up on that, and it's something that over time will not only breed resentment, but also can cultivate in them a rebellion rather than curb their rebellious spirit. And so it's important that we recognize this. Same thing in leadership, whether it be the leadership of a church or leadership on the job or leadership on a team that a person plays on. If we set a standard for everyone else, but we do not hold ourselves to the same standard, then it's poor leadership, and it'll cost us. It's seen as unfair. It's seen as unjust, and people just won't follow it. They just will not respond well to it. And I'm not telling you that I've always managed to accomplish this as a leader of the church, but I have tried very hard over the years to try to not make that mistake. If it applies to everybody else, it applies to me. A case in point, we have a policy with our folding tables back here that we decided many years ago when we replaced them and got the new ones and the new folding chairs that we weren't going to loan those out. But just simply because they would get scattered to and fro, some would come up missing, some would get broke, and we just felt like that wasn't the right thing to do. So we don't loan them out because we just didn't want to open a can of worms. Well, the first time Trish and I had something at our house that was not church related, but we needed tables and chairs. What do you think we did? We were put to the test, right? We did exactly what you thought. We snuck up here at night and we got the tables and we said, hey, we'll go buy our own because that's important that we do the same thing that we require of everybody else. And what's a $49 table is worth it than to be a hypocrite. And just little things, not just me, but we as Christians need to be conscientious of the way that we hold the standard we hold people to, that we ourselves will abide by that same standard. So that's enough of the first five verses. Let's go ahead and read verse 6 one more time, and then a few comments on that, and then I'll get you home. Verse 6 says, "Give not that which is holy unto the dogs, neither cast ye your pearls before the swine, lest they trample them under their feet and turn again and rend you." That's kind of a difficult verse to understand, and I'm not saying that I totally understand it, but I'll share with you what I think it to mean, and I think I'm not too far off track. It speaks of giving not that which is holy unto the dog. The reference there is there were sacrifices in those days. We know that the Jewish people went to the temple and they sacrificed, and the sacrifices very often were meat offerings that they were consecrated for to be sacrificed there in the temple, and that made them to be considered holy, okay? Now, that didn't mean that every bit of the sacrifice was burnt up, because they were allowed, for the priest would have some of that meat to eat. Some of it would be burnt up in an offering, and even some of it would be taken home by the family who were making the sacrifice. All of that was okay. But according to this verse, it says to throw that to the dogs. It would be unthinkable for a Jewish person to take that consecrated holy sacrifice and just throw it to dogs and let them eat it. They wouldn't have done that, okay? In ancient time, dogs were not what they are today. You know, man's best friend, and it's almost absurd what our attachment to animals sometimes today, but that's okay. In those days, dogs were more considered trashy varmints. Most of them were wild, with the exception of maybe working dogs like your sheep dogs and things like that. People didn't have dogs as household pets. They were mostly wild scavengers that fended for themselves to try to get something to eat. And so the Jewish people would not dare give something that was precious or holy to the dogs. On the other hand, the swine, we know that pork was something that was forbidden for the Jewish people to eat. And so swine were also detested by the Jews. and considered to be the epitome of uncleanness. They wouldn't have anything to do with swine. And so the idea of throwing something precious to a pig would have been unheard of to a Jewish person. And a pearl, see, you notice the term he uses there is a pearl. What is that? We consider it something precious, something that's valuable, something that's somewhat rare because of its origins, okay? So what he's the statement that he's making here, to throw your pearls before the swine, it would be like being ridiculous enough to take a precious pearl that has that value and throwing it to a pig. That pig would no more recognize the value of that pearl than if you threw a pebble at it. Wouldn't have a clue. But to you, it's valuable, and you recognize. And so it would be foolishness to throw the pearl to the swine or to throw the consecrated meat to a scavenging dog. It just wouldn't happen. That you wouldn't do that. Well, the point here, and again, give me some leniency because I'm not dogmatic about this, but this is the way I understand it to mean. The swine and the hogs represent what the perverseness or the ungodliness of the world. Those that don't value the things of God. They don't hold the word of God precious as you and I do. And the pearls and the holy sacrifices that we speak of, the holy things, represent what we have in Christ. The precious things, the word of God is precious to us. It's valuable, and it's been given to us. It's a blessing to us. And so we wouldn't want to throw that to the unholy. So what's it meaning? My understanding is just simply meaning there are times, and there are situations, and there are people, and there are groups of people that simply, no matter what, they're not going to appreciate the godly things that we embrace. They're not going to hold them in value like you and I. In fact, they, in many cases, detest what we stand for, okay? And so they're not being any appreciation there. There's sometimes that it just behooves you and I to just leave it alone. The ungodly is going to do the ungodly, and we're not going to allow what we have to be trampled underfoot. And I know this is kind of a hard saying, but there's times even to quit speaking out as a Christian. And not that we back off what we believe, but just times it's futile to address a situation. Let me give a quick example. Just popped to my head, but one time, a situation where some people were just having an extreme cuss fight, which I had many times when I was lost, but I don't anymore. We do it at the privacy of our home, but just a major cuss fight. And my tent in public with ladies and people all around, my tendency would be to go in there and say, hey guys, we're not doing this in front of these people. And there would be certain settings that I would do that, and anybody knows me that knows that I would. But in these circumstances, it would be futile. In fact, it would create a situation that would be worse for these people to see than if I just let this and just get out of the situation and let them be stupid, okay? Don't throw your pearls before the swine. One more quick, and I'll close this. You'll know I'm through. Say, hypothetically, there was a gay parade marching through town. It's a scheduled event. They're making their statement, whatever. Well, it would be futile for you and I to stand out there with our Bibles and march along with them preaching to that group. It'd be futile. It'd be a waste of time, and it would accomplish zero, okay? So don't throw your pearls to the swine. You just back off, and that's not the place to evangelize. You're not going to get it done. So recognize it, okay? I don't know if that's exactly what that verse means, but that's what I gleaned from it, okay? All right, appreciate you guys. Let's go ahead and stand. And we will get from here. I will try to get back there. Aaron, will you help me? Let's kind of watch these doors out here and let these ladies maybe get a safe Jeff, what do you got to get on the bus? Me and Aaron will make sure you ladies get home or get to your car safely. Once you get home, you're on your own. Okay? All right. All right. Good deal. Dwayne, will you lead us in prayer, please?